ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, chapter 7, text 21, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Yo-yo-yang-yang-tanong-bhakta Shraddhaya-chitam-icchati Tasya tasya chalang shraddham. Tam eva vidadham yaham. Yo yo yang yang tanung bhakta. Shraddhaya chitam icchati. Tasya tasya chalang shraddham. Tam eva vidadham yaham. Yo yo yang yang tanung bhakta. Shraddhaya chitam icchati. Tasya tasya chalang shraddham. Tam eva vidadham yaham. Yo yo yang yo yo yang yang tanung bhakta. Shraddhaya chitam icchati. Tasya tasya chalang shraddham. Tam eva vidadham yaham. Verse translation. I, Krishna states, am in everyone's heart as the super soul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. Purport, God has given independence to everyone. Therefore, if a person desires to have material enjoyment and wants very sincerely to have such facilities from the material demigods, the Supreme Lord, a supersoul in everyone's heart, understands and gives facilities to such persons. As the Supreme Father of all living entities, He does not interfere with their independence, but gives all facilities so that they can fulfill their material desires. Some may ask why the all-powerful God gives facilities to the living entities for enjoying this material world and so lets them fall into the trap of the illusory energy. The answer is that if the Supreme Lord, as Supersoul, does not give such facilities, then there is no meaning to independence. Therefore, He gives everyone the full independence, whatever one likes. But His ultimate instruction we find in the Bhagavad Gita that one should give up all other engagements and fully surrender unto Him. That will make man happy. Both the living entity and the demigods are subordinate to the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the living entity cannot worship the demigod by his own desire, nor can the demigod bestow any benediction without the supreme will. As it is said, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Generally, persons who are distressed in the material world go to the demigods as they are advised in the Vedic literature. A person wanting some particular thing may worship such and such a demigod. For example, a diseased person is recommended to worship the sun god. A person wanting education may worship the goddess of learning, Sarasvati. And a person wanting a beautiful wife may worship the goddess Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva. In this way, there are recommendations in the Shastras, Vedic scriptures, for different modes of worship of different demigods. And because a particular living entity wants to enjoy a particular material facility, the Lord inspires him with a strong desire to achieve that benediction from that particular demigod, and so he successfully receives the benediction. The particular mode of the devotional attitude of the living entity toward a particular type of demigod is also arranged by the Supreme Lord. The demigods cannot infuse the living entities with such an affinity, but because he is the Supreme Lord, or the Supersoul who is present in the hearts of all living entities, Krishna gives impetus to man to worship certain demigods. The demigods are actually different parts of the universal body of the Supreme Lord, therefore they have no independence. In the Vedic literatures it is stated, the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Supersoul is also present within the heart of the demigod. Therefore he arranges through the demigod to fulfill the desire of the living entity, but both the demigod and the living entity are dependent on the Supreme Will. They are not independent. Yo, yo, yang, yang, tanung, bhakta, shraddhayar, chitum, itchati, tasya, tas, ya, chalang, shraddham, tam, eva, vidadham, yaham. I'm in everyone's heart as the Supersoul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. This statement of Krishna's might seem rather surprising. The whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to get everyone to surrender to Krishna, to himself, giving up everything else. Krishna says, give up all other kinds of religion and just surrender to me. And in this section, particular section of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking about the futility of demigod worship. He's just stated in the previous verse, kamais taistaya ritagyana prapadyantena devataha. Persons who are impelled by material desire, which Krishna has already explained way back in the third chapter, is the cause of confusion, of covering of our intelligence, the cause of downfall. Persons impelled by that, by the influence of material desire, hritagyana, which Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur glosses as nashta buddhi, spoiled intelligence, such persons submit themselves anya devata, to other gods. But here Krishna says, and such foolish people, if someone wants to approach a demigod, I make their faith achalam, very strong. Well, it literally means unmoving. Why so? Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, because, well, they wanted it, so they got it. Otherwise, if we're always on the platform being unsure, we can't do anything. We can't direct our lives if we're always unsure about everything. So Krishna gives this facility that you want to worship a demigod? Okay, I'll make you think this is the best. This is the best way to go. Now, this principle of making one's faith strong in a demigod, this can be applied to everything that people put their faith into. It's clearly here stated within the context of demigod worship, but it may be applied to any god or any religion or any path, even atheism for that matter. One can be a convinced atheist. Where does that achala shraddha, unflinching, unmoving faith that there is no god, where does that come from? From God? How does it become so strong? Well, you wanted it, you got it. That's how it comes out. Now, those who are very committed to preaching the religion of atheism, or that they're very committed to try to convert people from being theists to atheists, they often ask that, well, if there's one God, why are there so many religions? And actually, many religious people ask that too, especially if they're a little open-minded. We hear that more from Hindus than from others, because the answer to that, if you are a fundamentalist in, say, Islam or Christianity, the reason there are other religions is so because of Satan, who made all these people evil, and they're just going to be thrown into hell. It's a very simplistic and puerile, which means childish, or, to put it straightforwardly, stupid outlook. And to an atheist, the trump line, they think they've got a really, they've defeated you. If you say, well, I believe in God, and they say, well, which God? Do you believe in the God of the Jews, or the Jews' God of the Muslims, or God of the Christians, the God of the Baptist Church, the Reformed Baptist Church, the Reformed Episcopalian Baptist Church, or the God of the Hindus, or Zeus, who was worshipped by the Greeks, or Jupiter, who was worshipped by the Romans, or Thor, who was worshipped by the Vikings? And there have been so many gods. And this seems to... and within Hinduism, of course, we have so many gods. Plenty of gods. 33 million and counting. You can always make up some more if you didn't have enough yet. So this seems to be a trump card for them, a winning proposition. Because, well, if you think of Zeus, everyone knows, well, there's no god as Zeus. That was just something that some people way back in Greece believed in, but no one worships Zeus anymore. So you mean and Jupiter and Thor, no one worships them anymore. And the Egyptian gods and Babylonian gods, and who knows how many gods there have been, which are now just dead gods. That's what the Christians preaching in India, they probably still say it, that they are worshipping dead gods, and ours is the living God. Jesus is the living God. They say that still, probably. These are all dead gods. Well, it means they were alive at some point, even if they say that. There was Krishna. Anyway, let's not get into that. So it gives the idea, well, maybe the God you're worshipping now, maybe... as human society goes on more and more, that the worship of Jesus will become defunct, and they'll worship Laban instead. Who is Laban? Well, it's a god that I just invented the name, but you never know. It might come up. In fact, if you follow having just said it, makes us think that, well, if there are unlimited possibilities, and therefore this earth, even though it's highly unlikely that things are as they are, but anyway, it is, because, and this is what they say, when it's pointed out that it's extremely unlikely that the world as we see it is in existence if we say it began with a big bang, that there's no God in control. So, well, there are enough chances, it could be. So, there you go. There's going to be worship of Laban in future, because there's enough chances, enough time, someone somewhere is going to be worshiping a god called Laban. And maybe someone already is. You never know. They saw it on the internet and said, hey, that's great. Start a new religion. So, they think they've got you trumped there. But, wait a minute, let's have a little theology here, and not just some childish atheism. The Vedic version of understanding is that, as is often quoted among Hindus, ekopi sanbahuda yo vibhati, that although the truth is one, well, actually much more commonly quoted is Ekam Sadvipra Bahuda Vedanti, which means that the truth is one, but it is spoken of variously. And this is usually cited by Hindus from the Rig Veda, usually cited to say that, see, the truth is one, but people speak of it in different ways. And you can, you know, you can speak of it in any way that you like. That's the interpretation. But the truth is one. And it's ultimately all is one, and there are different manifestations, and so whatever way you worship, it's all the same. It's all okay. Everything's okay. And then there's a Ekopi San Bahudayo Vabhati. The one truth manifests in many forms, or Ekam Santam Bahadu Drishyamanam. These are from the Shruti again, from Chandogya Upanishad. That although one is seen in various ways. So people who subscribe to the impersonalist understanding, which is like a big fog which obscures the spiritual understanding of everyone, especially in India, they think that, yeah, whatever you worship, it's all the same. Although nowadays they don't like Christianity and Islam, although in the beginning they thought, well, it's okay, it's just another way of worship. But now they're feeling, no, they're going to take us away. We have to strike back. And thus you get fundamentalist Hindus, which I never really understood, because there's nothing really to be fundamental about. In Islam, you can be fundamentalist about following the Quran, and in Christianity or Judaism, you can be fundamental about following the Bible, but what is there to be fundamental about? What is there to be fanatical about? The scripture doesn't lend itself to that. Anyway, we're going off on tangents again. But this idea that the absolute truth is one and is seen in various ways, or is spoken of in various ways, or manifest in every way in various ways, therefore whichever way you worship, it's all the same, it's all a manifestation of God, that actually is correct, but it needs to be qualified. There's in the ninth chapter, there's a verse which many times we think the seventh chapter and the ninth chapter, they're the same. They could almost be, you could almost mix up the verses and interchange them. They're very similar. So, in the ninth chapter, Krishna again talking about demigod worship. Yepi anya devata bhakta yajante shodhayanvita. It's almost the same words that are used as in the verse we just read now. Tepi mam eva kaunteya yajantya vidhi purvakam. So this verse is in the ninth chapter. It explains this verse in the seventh chapter. It explains or gives further explanation. Krishna says, someone who wants to worship another god, the same kamais taista vidagana prabhadyante nyadevata, same word, anyadevata, who worships with faith, Krishna says, I give that faith, achala shrata, tepi mam, that actually is for me, or they're worshipping me. But yajanti, they worship avidhi purvakam, not in the right way. So, in one sense, they're all worshipping Krishna. Whoever you worship, in one sense you're worshipping Krishna, because Krishna is the object of worship. Ultimately, only Krishna is to be worshipped. Just like if a man loves a woman, actually that's meant for Krishna. The propensity to love is meant to be directed toward Krishna. And then man can love a woman or anyone else, but that should be via Krishna, the object of love is Krishna, and then love to all other living beings naturally comes. But if we try to direct it to someone else except Krishna, then it's in the wrong way, and although love seems very good, if it's not directed toward Krishna, then it must get messed up, because it's directed in the wrong way. That's why we should object to all these Mayavadis who talk about love and universal love and compassion and gratefulness and all these things without specifying Krishna, because they're just messing people up by giving the idea that you can have love and compassion and gratefulness and all these things without clearly directing that toward Krishna. It's the love of this world produces the hate of this world. They're inseparable. Srila Prabhupada wrote an essay in Back to Godhead, I believe it was during the Second World War, he published this, and he was quoting a politician, or just after the Second World War, about talking about the frenzy of hate. Frenzy, do you know what it means? It means very violent activity. It doesn't necessarily mean violence, but very highly active and out of control, of frenzied action. So the frenzy of hate. And then Srila Prabhupada, he quoted this politician about how we have to get free from the frenzy of hate. And Srila Prabhupada said, if we want to get free from the frenzy of hate, we have to get free from the frenzy of love also, because they both go together in this material world. Just like we always think the mother's love is very pure. And Srila Prabhupada said that the mother's, in this world, the mother's love for a child is the closest thing to pure love. But it's not completely pure. And that can be seen when one child fights with another child, then the mother's love for her own child clashes with the other mother's love for that child, and the two mothers fight each other. And the mother doesn't love the other child, it's only for her own child. So it's not pure love, it's only directed toward her own child, because it's that child is, she considers to be her own. So it's not really pure love. Pure love has to be all embraced for all, not just because this is my child and therefore I love. And then you hate everyone. I love my country, and so let's march to war and fight a war and make all the other members of another, we'll take pleasure in giving pain to others, because as long as we are happy, our people, as long as we are happy, then what the hell to others? And in fact, we get happiness in seeing others unhappy. Keep them down. Don't let them come up. So this is material love. There's no material love actually. So this, it's improperly directed. So all worship, the propensity to worship, is meant to be for Krishna, and some god or whatever may reciprocate, but they reciprocate on behalf of Krishna, or via Krishna. Krishna explains in the 7th chapter, text 22, which is the verse after the one we just read now, that satya shraddhaya yukta, being imbued with that faith, which I give them, such persons, tasya radhanam ihate, in this world, they worship that demigod, labhate chatatakaman, they get their desire fulfilled, they may do, mayaiva vihitan hitan, but actually it's me who's giving it. We think that this demigod is giving it to me, or this god who I'm worshipping is giving it to me, but actually it's Krishna. That if we think of someone as our benefactor, they may benefact us. But their ability to do so is only on behalf of Krishna. They take the role of, in one sense, they take the role of Krishna, or we see them as our benefactor. But actually, it's they're working as tiny representatives of Krishna. Now, this idea, why are there so many religions? Which gods? Zeus, Jupiter. Okay, so people used to worship Zeus, Jupiter. They're parallel to the demigods in Vedic culture, and we find that all over the world. And Westerners who study this, what they call mythology, they say, well, see, the gods, they're not such great people, you see. They seem to be just like humans. They fight among each other, and they fight over women, and they're partial to others. Yeah, that's because they're demigods. They're not perfect beings. In the Vedic literature describes also the various demigods. We know they're not perfect beings. They're pious beings, but they're not perfect beings. There may be some level of anthropomorphism in that. Anthropomorphism means imagining God to be like us. Or, so, for instance, Zeus, the god, that is supposed to be the top god, and it seems like the equivalent of Indra in Vedic culture, was supposed to live on Mount Olympus in Greece. So they think, well, our god is here. And in the what they call the ancient world, the different people had different gods, and people would pray to different people would pray to their different gods, and then they think that in the heavens our god is fighting with their god, and the god who the Christians ended up worshipping was actually the god of the Jews. He was a tribal god, god of the Jews. Anyway, this is all a lot of history, but that feeling of how do people relate with God? They feel some feeling of awe, God is protecting me. They feel there's a very strong feeling. People feel for Jesus. They may even have the stigmata manifest. Stigmata means the marks of Jesus being crucified, the blood coming out of his hands and his feet and his side. That sometimes happens. People get that. That's again, Pishas Kritanya is described in Vedic literature. If you meditate upon something very deeply, then you may get that that what is meditated upon in the subtle body may manifest in the gross body. And one reason why the Christians, the early Christians, and up to the present day, they preach this is how Jesus did so many miracles. So that's proof to them that, see, he's God. Although this Apollonius in Greece, he was just around in Greece just before Jesus. So when they came and said, Jesus did this, and they said, bah, our Apollonius, he did a lot better miracles than your Jesus, and he didn't say he was God. He went to India and learned all these yogic things, and then he came back. So that's supposed to be proof. And up to the present day, we still find such things going on, of people being healed miraculously because of their faith in some god or this god or that god. It's Krishna manifesting through these various saints, the saints in the Catholic religion and the Orthodox church. They are just like the demigods. They're assigned to that. And Krishna can work through that. Even if people, whatever they believe in, Krishna will reciprocate in some way. Yeyata mang prapadyante tangs tathaiva bhajami aham. However people approach me, Krishna says, I reciprocate. So he may say, well, what about Sai Baba? People believe in Sai Baba. They have a lot of feeling for this Sai Baba or that Sai Baba. The next Sai Baba is supposed to be on the way, right? Wasn't it? There used to be a Rajkumar Sai Baba, the heir apparent. He was already in line. What happened to him? Any idea? There are seven of them. They're arguing among each other. Seven new Sai Babas. No, none of them have been officially recognized. The old Sai Baba didn't appear in the sky in his wheelchair and give a blessing. Give a blessing to, this is the real Sai Baba. Didn't happen. There's this Dalai Lama also said he's going to be the last. He decided. Before that, he said the next one could be a woman. Then after that, he decided, well, enough Dalai Lamas. I'll go out in a trail of glory. I guess it's when the Sikhs also had their last guru, right? Anyway, what do we care for all these? People have great faith. So, there's a verse in the third canto, prayer to Krishna. I'm going to take it a little out of context here, but it is possible to take it out of context a bit. Tvam bhakti yoga paribhavita hritsaroja aseshu tekshita pato nanu nata pungsam yad yaddhi atu ta urugaya vibhavayanti tat tadvapuv pranayase sad anugrahaya. O my Lord, your devotees can see you through the ears by the process of bona fide hearing, and thus their hearts become cleansed and you take your seat there. You are so merciful to your devotees that you manifest yourself in the particular form. Srila Prabhupada inserts the word eternal form here for clarification. Eternal form of transcendence in which they always think of you. So the Lord manifests himself in various forms to the devotees, and he may also manifest himself in various forms to the non-devotees who may also have some religious feeling toward that person or object. They have a religious experience. They feel God is with me. God has come in the form of this Baba or my guru or whatever. And you find so many people there. Many years ago, I remember in Baroda, one young girl came in and the devotees brought her to meet me, and she was very excited to tell me about her guru. I said, so well, what's so special about your guru? He said, he's Shiva directly. I said, he's not. He's just a cheater and a rascal. And she would go, ooh! She was so, how can you say about my guru? He's gone. So they feel very upset because they feel that this is actually God. Of course, they would be advised to actually find out who is God by shutekshita pata, the verse we just read, by the path of hearing about him. So we may say, well, if Krishna manifests himself and people have religious feelings and they worship Sai Baba and bogus gurus, well, what's wrong with that? Or what's wrong with worshipping demigods? Well, kam aistaista, because kam, they worship out of material desire, and kam covers our real knowledge. Jnanam avrita dehinam, it covers the real knowledge. Yepi anya devata bhakta, no, that's the, what's that other verse? The, kam antavattu palangte shang tadat tad bhavyat yalpa medhasam. Those who worship the demigods, they're of less intelligence because they worship for temporary boons. Yanti deva vrata deva, and they go to the planets of the demigods, which are in the material world, which is subject to destruction. So the worship of the demigods can be said to be foolish, although yajante sattvika deva, although it's within the mode of goodness. But worship of all these bogus people, although it may be that Krishna is manifesting himself, but in one sense, but that it's not that that Sai Baba becomes God because people think he is, but rather he's catching their tendency to worship God and catching it for himself. And the reciprocation that he gives is through his through Krishna's external energy, and it's all material. In the Ishopanishad, it is stated, Andham tamapravishanti ye sambhutim upasate tato bhuya ivate tamo ya u sambhutyam rataha. Those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so do the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. So it's not that you all get the same result. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, the ignorant to this Ishopanishad verse, he writes, the ignorant pseudo-religionists and the manufacturers of so-called incarnations who directly violate the Vedic injunctions are liable to enter into the darkest regions of the darkest region of the universe, because they mislead those who follow them. Pseudo-religionists are heading toward the most obnoxious place in the universe after completion of their spiritual master business, which they conduct simply for sense gratification. So, although in one sense, any kind of religion can be said to be worship of God, but it's not all the same. Krishna is manifesting himself there, directly or indirectly. But it's not that everything is all good. About this question, why are there many religions in the world? Srila Prabhupada often addressed this, because it was a question that was often brought to him. Why you're preaching this? Well, so many people are preaching different things. Srila Prabhupada stated in a lecture, if God is one, there cannot be two religions, because religion means to understand God and to love God. You get the point? It's clear, isn't it? That is religion. And religion means the words of God. That's dharmang tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Just as it is said, so why should there be two religions? There cannot be two religions. There may be some difference according to the climate, country, population. There may be some difference in the execution of religion, but on principle there cannot be two religions, because God is one and religion means the words of God. So how can there be two religions? We have made 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, increasing the number of religions. Just like in New York, we have seen the United Nations organization. It is said that they are united, but there are thousands of flags disunited, because actually they do not want to unite. It is a farce that they have made a United Nations organization. Nobody wants to unite. In the material world, how can there be unity? That is not possible. Material world means everyone wants to enjoy to his satisfaction, sense gratification. That is the material world. So you want to satisfy your senses. I want to satisfy my senses. Therefore, there is a struggle. Oh, this man is enjoying so much. I am unable. Even brother to brother is envious. Oh, my brother has increased so much money. He is enjoying. Envious. That is material envy, to be envious. Therefore, the science of God is for persons who are not envious. That is religion. In other words, well, this is clearly derived from the second verse of Srimad Bhagavan, Dharma Projata Kaitavatra Paramo Nirmat Saranam Satam. This Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, which is the scientific delineation of the knowledge of the personality of Godhead, this is meant for the non-envious, and it rejects all materially motivated religion. So Srila Prabhupada points out that actual religion is for people who are not envious. Religion means to approach God, to love God. That is not possible if one is envious. But whatever goes on in this world in the name of religion, it's all for sense gratification. Priti vite jato kichu dharma nama chale bhagavata kahe taha paripurna chale. This is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Bengali verse rendition of that line of Bhagavatam, first three words of the second verse of Bhagavatam. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that whatever goes on in the name of religion in this world, it's all cheating. It's all cheating religion. Because people want sense gratification. They want sense gratification by religion, by politics, by education. It's all for sense gratification. So their so-called religion is just another phase of sense gratification. That's all. Srila Prabhupada is analyzing very nicely here. Shiva Ramaswamy, in one of his books, analyzed that to the question, why there are so many religions? I'll paraphrase this. The general answer is that the Supreme Lord has given people of various natures in various countries a multitude of ways to come to understand the one eternal truth that brings everyone to Him, loving devotional service. That's what we generally say, that different people are in different stages, and so they're given a path of religion which is just suitable for them at that stage, at that level of consciousness, so they may follow that and gradually come to a better stage. But I'll just paraphrase Shiva Ramaswamy here. But it doesn't mean that all religions are the same. There is a gradation. It is a better religion, or if we're using religion in not in the sense that Srila Prabhupada uses, as it's commonly used, the better religion is not simply to follow some rituals, but to be completely absorbed in God. And one should know what He wants also. You gave me the Gokul Chandraprabhu that video about the monks on Mount, what's it called? Athos, is it pronounced? And it seems they're very absorbed. They're chanting the names of God while they're doing it. Kyrie eleison, God have mercy. What's the second line to that? That's Greek. We used to have the Catholic Mass, and that part came up in Greek. Kyrie eleison, then there's something else eleison. I can't remember. I just remember that part. It comes near the beginning of the Mass, about one quarter of the way through. Must have been the same. It was the same all over the Catholic world. Now it's all in the local languages. So that's one good thing about keeping our liturgy in Sanskrit and Bengali. Then you can go all over the world and join the same. But if you go from here to Bangalore, and there it'll be in Canada or something, and here it's in Tamil, and it'll change. Anyway, so they're praying to God all the time, but they're really into it. They're really absorbed in Jesus and all this, but their understanding is very meager. Zero, you said it. And apart from other things, they catch fish and eat it, which means they have no actual developed God consciousness, because there's no need for them to eat fish. If you have actually love for God, well, why would you want to catch fish and kill them and cut them up? Another thing I saw, they said that, well, we're living the same way as we lived here 1,000 years ago, but they have electricity and computers and everything, so it's not exactly the same. Anyway, they appear to be very advanced, and they're probably the best thing that's going on in Christianity. But still, there's no proper understanding. How can there be? Because Christ Himself didn't give any real understanding, as far as we understand. And whatever philosophy came in the Christian church came about 1,000 years after Christ. And it was all borrowed from the ancient Greeks, who weren't particularly religious in their philosophy anyway. The same with Islam, because their founding, Jesus and Muhammad, they didn't give much philosophy. Later on, you have to add it, because people ask so many questions, and you have to explain things. But so it's not that they had a story and they add the philosophy later. That's what they did. But in the Vedic culture, it's not like that. There's a very significant difference that they in these religions, they added the philosophy later. But in Vedic culture, it's there, it's inseparable right from the very beginning. So that's a very significant difference. So it's not that it's all the same. Savai pungsang paro dharmo yato bhaktirat hokshujaya haitokya pratiyata yayatma suprasitati. If you don't know the meaning of this verse, you should. If you're coming here regularly, you should know the meaning of this verse. If you don't, write it down, look it up. Savai pungsang paro dharmo yato bhaktir ad hokshaje ahaitukya pratihataya yatma suprasidati. That's what you're all here for, I hope. The topmost occupation or dharma for every living being is that by which he renders loving service unto the transcendent Lord. Here the term is not given the Supreme Lord, the transcendent Lord. It's very significant why that is so. Such service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. Anyway, I won't read the rest of what he says. Hare Krishna. Any question, please? Yeah. Krishna is fixing the strong faith, so no use to preach to anyone. Yeah, well, Krishna makes the faith very strong, but if our desire is very strong to bring Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy to others, then he's also very strong in spreading Krishna consciousness. So our desire has to be strong. Once a devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, why is Maya so strong? And Srila Prabhupada said, because your determination is not strong. Because we prefer to be overpowered by Maya. We like it. So Achala here we understand, immovable faith, we understand that to be stated in a qualified sense, not in an absolute sense. Otherwise, Jivesarupoi Krishna Nitya Das would not be meaningful. If that would mean that worship of the demigods is an eternal function. But that's not a fact. Because the demigods themselves are not eternal. What to speak of the jivas who are worshipping them? Demigods are also jivas. Yeah, that's an interesting point. If we just look, we'll find so many points. Anything else? Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Sri Gaur Nitai ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is ki jai. Samaveta Bhaktavinda ki jai. Hare Krishna.